The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And you know, you research your investments, you analyze markets, you manage risk. But have you researched your broker? For the past 3 years, Interactive Brokers' individual clients averaged an annual return of 24.3% compared to 23.1% on the S&P 500. IBKR's lower trading costs, competitive rates, efficient execution, and access to over 170 global markets help investors keep more of what they earn and put more capital to work. Over time, the broker you choose matters. Interactive Brokers, member SIPC. If you care about performance, find out why the best-informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Go to ibkr.com/performance. That's ibkr.com/performance.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Inflation is so hot, the Fed is concerned. And Fed Chair Warsh, well, he makes his debut. Markets booed. Another deal delay in the war in Iran, and chips and dips, investors eating them up. Our guest today is Frank Curzio of Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 798 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome to another episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm your host of this podcast and that we do each and every week here in the downtown Fort Lauderdale studios. And yeah, here we are. It's sunny. It's hot. It's wonderful. It's another week in June gone by. And, you know, I thought about what's going on with the war in Iran and the idea that we have another delay out there. And, you know, the only difference in the between the words deal and delay is the letter Y. Think about it. And the question you have to ask is why? Why is it so important to get a deal done, even though it seems like a really crappy deal from every aspect that I've looked at? The 14-point overall deal that was made is worse than we had before, in fact, we started this war. In fact, Iran is much better off because they're getting all sorts of money and they're getting sanctions lifted. They're getting money flow from the sale of oil now. And, you know, makes no sense, but it's all about just getting beyond it. Markets don't want to deal with it anymore. And that's why we saw the markets lift so nicely into the end of the week. A really good week, even though we saw a little bit of a retracement after Fed Chair Warsh had an opportunity to say, you know what? We're not going to tell you anything. Sorry. It's just, you know, it's what it is. We're not going to say much. 140 words versus 360 words in their statement. And they're going to keep their mouths a little shut, which is something that I've been talking about for a very long time. The fact is that they've been way too loud. They've been way too noisy. The Fed parade that we've talked about has been out. And the reality is that right now, hopefully, that's going to change things. It's a holiday shortened week. We had Juneteenth on Friday, and the markets are closed. Another holiday coming up in a couple of weeks. We've got Friday, July 3rd is coming up. And that's going to be the official celebration of the July 4th Independence Day, 250 years for the United States. And that's going to be pretty exciting. What we did see was that we had a quad witching, huge volume on Thursday. It's usually on a Friday, but because the markets were closed, it happened on a Thursday. We got stock options, stock index options. We saw that single stock futures and stock index futures and stock all four of those were all at the same time. So what does that actually mean? I mean, people ask, well, oh, we got quad witching or we got, you know, triple witching. These happen once a month. One of them once is a quarter. And we have extra volume that comes in because, and it usually comes in right at the close of the markets, by the way, right towards the close. And you see that big vault of volume that happens at about 3:45, 3:50 or so in the afternoon into the close of the markets. and that big push in the end. The NASDAQ volume was the highest of the year. A lot of rebalancing, a lot of movement that happened in the overall markets. And it was a really interesting turnaround in one day. We saw that the day before there was a concern that we have this inflationary pressure and the Fed is going to be rather aggressive on their stance on what's happening. Hawkish commentary clearly from them talking about the potential, or not talking about, but intimating, or at least the markets took it as that he was looking to increase rates sometime in the future. You know, we came into this year and a lot of people thought that we were going to see two rate drops, right? Cuts going into the year. If you listen to me, I've said there's no way that's going to happen. Inflation, even without the war, without the prices of oil moving so much higher, it's a problem. And I thought about it and I said, you know, even though a lot of my guests that came on were talking about rate cuts, I'm thinking, no, I don't think this is possible. A couple of things to consider: that this was his inaugural meeting. He has to come in with a stance that seems a little bit different and a little bit more his style and setting the stage for what's going to be. It delivered the worst S&P 500 performance of a new chair's first day since 1994. It was the worst first day outing by a Fed chair since 1994. And according to data from Bespoke Investment Group, the post-meeting drop marks the roughest first day for newly appointed Fed chair in decades. Okay, we got that. But the S&P has averaged about 12% in the first 3 months of a new Fed chair. Alan Greenspan's introductory 3 months, we saw a whopping 33% drop during that time. That was unbelievable. You know that, I don't know if you know this, but Alan Greenspan's still alive. He's 100 years old. He was born on March 6, 1926. He's best known as serving as the Fed chair from 87 to 2006. Not a great time to start back in 87. Now, you may say, well, bad timing, but did he cause the problem? There was a little bit of a dovish tilt to the commentary that talked about price stability. Maybe some confusion about that with Warsh, but the bottom line was that after that, on the heels of that Wednesday commentary, we saw that President Trump said, hey, I signed a deal, by the way, at dinner the other night. A deal that had that 14-point memo of understanding, the MOU. 60-day delay, again, deal, same letters with a Y thrown in there. And that's kind of an interesting situation. The bottom line on this is that we are currently in a situation where there is no end in sight to this if the nuclear ambitions of Iran doesn't go away. But I think that it's actually kind of oddly good for the markets to have this on and off again, because we get the shorts that come in, then the shorts have to cover, and then pushes everything up, and there's more money that's brought in due to the AI trade, the fact that technology is leading the charge in all this. So it's perversely and strangely, a market that is in a weird way enjoying all this. Investors have gotten to a point that they don't even listen and care anymore. We don't know what's true and what's not, so we're like, you know what, forget it, throw in the hat, who cares? The fact of the matter is, it looks like they want out of this, so we're happy with that. Oil prices down, sub 80 on WTI crude, great stuff. So that's where we're going with this. We're going to bring on our guest right now, and I want to have a conversation with him because he brings a wealth of information. It's Frank Curzio. Curzio Research, he's been around for many, many years, podcasting just about as long as I have. His firm, Curzio Research, you can find him. We'll put the information on the show notes for this episode over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Let's get right to that. How's it going out there? You know who I'm going to bring on next, right? This is my good friend, my colleague, guy I've known for many, many years, a stupendous financial dude, a fundamental analyst, an incredible maker of money. This is Frank Xavier Curzio. Frank, how are you?
What's going on, buddy? How's everything?
It's great, man. Xavier, I didn't know that was your middle name. Was that also your dad's middle name?
My dad's middle name? Yeah, passed down. Xavier. Not a lot of Xaviers around, but yes.
None. Nope. And I bet you most people don't even know how to spell it.
I bet you, yes.
I thought we'd dig in on a lot of interesting things that are going on, because we are not at all lacking of interesting things to talk about. One of the things, though, I do want to get to is alpha, but we'll leave that as a tease. We'll leave that as a little tease. Yep. But you're looking good, my friend. You've been working out again, I see.
Trying to. As you get older, you got to work out. So, yeah, I'm not getting any prettier, but I'm trying to lose a little bit of weight. So, to overcompensate a little bit. But, yes, I'm working out a little bit. What about you? How you doing? Still playing pickleball or what?
You know, actually, funny you mentioned that. Oh. I have a meniscus issue that is a combination of working out. I think I got this 5 years ago. One of my guests on the show, Vitaly Katsenelson, he comes down to Florida. He says, hey, let's get together. I'm like, look, I've been having you as a guest on the show for years. I never really met you in person. Let's do it. We go walking on the boardwalk down in Miami on the beach, and we're walking. I'm like, how far are we going, dude? It's like, you know, I got to get back to the office. He's like, oh, we'll go a little more. I said, but we got to walk back too, right? By the time I walk back, my knee is killing me. It's like five years ago. Mm-hmm. All right, it comes and goes. I play pickleball. I'm playing pickleball. It's getting stiffer and stiffer as I'm playing over the last year. One day I'm like, you know what? I'm not playing very well lately. And I started thinking, you know what? I'm not moving very well either. And I said, my leg's killing me. So I stopped playing that day, and my leg was just killing me. So now I had the PRP. Exactly 4 weeks to the day in on the PRP. My ankles look like cankles on my right foot, and having a hard time. So no pickleball probably for another month and a half, but then I'm going back. Probably a month and a half. Then I'm going back, but I'm still working out. I'm at the gym 3 days a week doing my thing.
Good. Same shape.
But enough about me. Let's talk about me some more.
You got it. Let's go. It's all you. It's always you. Let's go.
Let's talk about, I want to talk, I have a mishmash of things that I listed as questions to start the conversation and talk about. I thought last week, which was another holiday shortened week, as we know, Juneteenth, everything was closed on Friday, but all of a sudden, Wednesday night into Thursday, we got some information, we got news. It's like a nonstop stream of information on Trump social or whatever, Truth Social, whatever. How do you feel about our president of the United States talking his book? And I'm specifically referring to Intel right now. And I think you had a piece that you wrote about this called Trump Circle.
Yes, I think when you ask the question, it's the wrong question. How do you feel? It's not about feelings. You listen to Andrew, you listen to me, and follow us, because when you trust us, we've been doing this for a very long time, and we care about our customers. But more importantly, is our job is to make you money. And when if you're upset at Trump and you hate Trump, that's fine. You can hold up a sign. That's not, you know, whatever you want to do. But when it comes to getting in his circle and what that means, you saw what it meant with Intel, because it wasn't just, hey, let me take a stake at Intel. And by the way, that stake was $9 billion at $23.50. That stock is $130 today. So taxpayers are up, you know, 570%, which we should be ecstatic about, because the government have made anything money on anything in ever in history, right? The post office loses what, like $7 billion a year for how many years? And we know that similar business like UPS and FedEx do perfectly fine and make a fortune, right? So they can't run any business. In terms of them taking it, I wouldn't worry about the social aspect. It's not like they're on the board or anything, but what it means when you're in Trump's circle, and we've made so much money with, you know, Alcoa and all technology companies, that, especially in the Middle East, when they all travel with him, is by taking a stake in Intel, what did that do? It removes a lot of red tape, and it takes a lot of risk off of the stock, where you don't have to worry about funding, which they were worried about, right? And it was a crappy run company for two decades. Yeah. They missed every trend. It was terrible. It was Intel. I mean, Intel was one of the greatest companies in the world, right? 20 years ago. I mean, it was top five in market cap. It was great and just missed everything. So now when you have the government taking a stake, what does that mean? What happened immediately? NVIDIA came in. Yeah. SoftBank came in. Now, look, you have the Apple deal, right? Now, all of a sudden, those fab plants that were losing so much money is a waste of time. We're trying to get more manufacturing here for chips because we're worried maybe, you know, who knows? We didn't think the strait would actually close. We're talking about that since the 80s that could happen, and it happened. We could see China and Taiwan get into a conflict, and we know that would crush the world economy, because all the major chips are made there, right, from Taiwan Semi. So now all of a sudden you have Intel getting a flood of money, a flood of capital, and, you know, good, much, much better management team. So from a stock perspective, when you see our administration, especially they're taking, you know, rare earths now, it's really big. Pay attention, and I think you should buy a lot of these stocks. We've done very, very well. Put your personal feelings aside. It's not whether you agree with it or not. Is it socialist? It's not like Trump's running that company specifically. The board runs it. They make the decisions. But when you have the government take a stake, especially in mining companies, it's so difficult to get permits. It's so difficult to get contracts. And when you remove that red tape, it opens up the door for private capital to come in. And that's why these stocks really start taking off.
But the thing that kind of gets me, and I find it to be a funny thing, is that for years we had people like Navarro, right? Navarro, the China hater. And the same in that group of people that were like, oh my God, you know that China has, you know, they would say, you know, China has an unfair advantage. Why is that? Well, basically, they have state-owned industry. That's a terrible thing. It's anti-capitalism. It's communist. It's socialist and a lot. And I just find it humorous. That's all. Just humorous. Mm-hmm. Not saying that I wouldn't invest alongside of it per se, but don't you find that a little bit strange?
Yeah, strange. Again, I just think we're asking the wrong questions of if it's, you know, personal feelings, then I get it. I think that there's a massive difference between what China does. They control those companies, have total access to all of their, you know, the privacy and everything, every single thing that they do, you know, and the profits and who knows how much they take in certain quarters. So, you know, it's different there. The government runs everything and there's no process of, you know, it's why China, when they want something done, they get it done immediately, right?
Doesn't
it? You know, she says, hey, we're getting it done. It's done. It's not like you have to go through Congress and all this stuff. But, you know, I wouldn't worry about, you know, Intel in terms of, you know, our government, like, you know, taking a lot of their profits. And I just, you know, they made money on that stake. It's taxpayer money, which is good. But at the end of the day, it removes a lot of red tape. It frees up these companies to get lots of contracts. And please do not underestimate the power of his network and the amount of money he's able to raise for these companies. And that's a lot of money coming into these companies once he basically gives them the okay.
So we're okay as stockholders. We're okay as investment people, right? We're okay as individuals mm-hmm. that like to make more money and all that. What happens on the other side of this? What happens if we have a president that now takes that power 10 years from now, 4 years from now, mm-hmm. whatever, and says, you know what, we do not, like, Mandami becomes president. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, right?
Yeah.
And what happens if now that's like, well, you know what, it's okay, I guess, to do these kinds of things. We're now going to crush these companies. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we'll know in advance of anything like that happening. I'm just saying, and a crazy example, but...
We almost lived through this in the previous administration.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, look at Elon Musk, and he came on and said, if you're going to, you're basically bribing me to say things on my platform, or you're not going to advertise with me, and you're going to make sure you pull all the advertisers, right? So you know, each administration has its risks. And then as investors, we need to adjust. I'm not saying if you're a Republican or a Democrat, whether you hate it or not, you know, there was favorable terms for climate change, clean energy companies in the last administration. Now, a lot of that's gone and it's shifted. Now, you know, you seem, you're better off oil companies, coal companies in this administration. So instead of, you know, pounding your chest or holding up a sign and getting pissed off, what is this about? It's about, you know, the reason why you're listening to our podcast and doing this is to make money, generational wealth, you know, pay for your kids' colleges and you know, right. Be financially secure, retire. So on that note, you know, asking the right questions is how do you make money on stocks? Because the politicians don't care about you, don't care about me, don't care about anybody except themselves, right? They get reelected. So, you know, let's make money on their backs, on their stupid decisions. And that's always how I looked at it.
And that's the same thing as I've said this 1,000 times. I'm just going to tell you because I don't know how many times I've talked about this with mm-hmm. you at all. But, you know, I had somebody, a client or a prospective client call me last week. And, you know, I looked at his portfolio and it was very clear when I looked at his portfolio that he was basically a bunker mentality, doomsdayer, prepper, because mm-hmm. the things he had in this portfolio were everything but the stuff that you'd want if you were like, hey, let's get and go. Let's get this market rolling. You know, everything mm-hmm. was like, okay, what happens if the shit hits the fan? I got some protection, right? And I'm like, I said to him, how's that going for you? You know, well, you know, I think the markets are rigged and this and that, this whole thing. I said, let me ask you a question. Seriously, you and I, we go to Vegas and I say, Frank, you see that slot machine over there? That slot machine over there, it's rigged, totally mm-hmm. rigged. And you're like, no, I don't play rigged slot machines. I'm like, no, you don't understand. It's rigged in your favor. It's rigged in your favor, man. Go play. Mm-hmm. No. What happens if this or that? I'm like, all right, I'm not going to go through that. That's exactly the point that if, in fact, people are thinking, oh, the stock market's rigged, it's manipulated, it's a lot. Yeah, and? Right? Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, the fact is that we could put all sorts of labels on all of this, but in the end, Frank, it's all about making money for financial security, financial independence. And all. Mm-hmm. That's all. Am I right?
And that's why they use guys like you to manage their money, right? To keep their personal feelings aside, because, and us, we're, you know, our job is to look at this stuff all the time and figure out, you know, what's the best areas for you to make money. And you know, I may hate a sector and I may like a sector, you know, a couple of years later, depending on what changes. So that, you know, it's not, for us, our job isn't to be like, oh, we hate that forever. And I think that's a big mistake investors make. Right. Like they'll look at a company and say, you know, it's down like 60-70% and they'll say, okay, all these risks. Okay. It's down because of those risks. Right. What's the future now? If they're able to change that, they've been working on cutting costs for 18 months. How do they change that? So, yeah, that's important looking forward for us is, you know, there's never a bias. It's wherever we can make money for you guys, that's where we're going to look. And if that's because of crappy policies or good policies, that factors into the equation very much.
And that's the point, isn't it? It's not like we're here to make money for people, right? We're here to assist them in that process. And, you know, it's like going into a restaurant and saying, no, you know, I'm not doing this. And it's like, I'm not eating. It's like, wait, didn't you come in here for us to feed you? I mean, what's the point?
Or a comedy show. And then you're yelling at the, yeah. It's like, you're supposed to be in Italy. Yeah, it's crazy. And again, you got to put your personal feelings aside. Right. And if you do that, you can see clearly. And, you know, listen, you and I think, are both like this. And you know, sometimes telling the truth pisses a lot of people off. Like, I'm going to tell you something. Deficits don't mean anything. And people are like, well, all this stuff I heard, the dollar's going to lose its reserve currency status and all this crap. You know, look at the 80s, the early 80s. The same exact story the whole entire time. When deficits matter is when you can't pay them. That's when they matter. For now, you folks are in deficit. Yes, we know where it is. Yes, we know it's $1 trillion in payments, but we're paying it, right? So as long as we're paying it on time, you know, you sat around and did nothing with the markets at all-time highs and keep hitting all-time highs for how many years in a row outside of a few bumps of 2022 and 2020? You know, because of the amount of money the government's spending and putting into the market and creating inflation, as long as they're not crazy inflation is very good for asset prices, which is why you see the separation of wealth, because people who don't own assets are getting crushed. People who do, they're seeing those assets go higher and higher.
And that's a big problem. That's a thing that I think a lot of people are missing here. The idea that if we have inflation, which, by the way, could be a problem down the road, because if the inflation gets to be too much, we know about this, right? And things get crazy, then the Fed's going to come in, they're going to knock it down.
2022 playbook.
Yep. Yeah, 2022, where literally nothing worked. Mm-hmm. Literally. And even the things that you worked and if you were right on were still just less bad, right? Mm-hmm. That was 22, as I always say. You know, you could be right in 22, but it was like, well, if you're right, you're kind of still wrong. You lost money. I want to jump into some of the things that are going on right now, but that I am starting to get a little bit of the hair on the back of my neck is starting to stand up just a wee bit. When I see a company like a Western Digital, right? Or, you know, you look at some of like a Seagate, or you look at some of these chip companies, or SK Hynix or a Samsung, literally like going up 8 or 9% every single day.
I know.
And what's bad is when they only go up 3%. Mm-hmm. Chips, semiconductors, there has been a history of, I think you'd agree with this, a history of cycles where it's boom or bust, boom and bust, where they do what kind of, I pin this like title agents. When mortgage activity is really good, title agents get really excited. And what they do is they overbuild, they overhire, they overextend themselves. And then all of a sudden they're like, wait, I didn't know that things would slow down eventually. Like, hello. Do you think that the chip situation that we have right now, which, by the way, is an insatiable appetite for, can I just say any chip ink, doesn't matter, right? Any Qualcomm chips or, it doesn't matter, whatever. But pick your name on the chip companies. And there's an insatiable appetite for the build out of compute, the big general name of that. Are these moves justified?
Absolutely. Absolutely, without a doubt. And I'll tell you why, because people want to compare this market to .com. There is a huge difference, because what we saw at .com, there's stocks started going up. And if you look at the profits right before 2000 started going down. Okay, so these companies were just going up in price and they didn't have the earnings, right? These companies have an explosion in earnings because of the amount of money that's being spent on AI, and it's real money. Okay, maybe they, you know, that dries up one day, but companies are spending, right? So you're looking at $700 billion is being spent by the five largest hyperscalers, and this is in 2026, like for the next 12 months. That, which, to put that in perspective, in January 2025, it was massive growth. They thought it was going to be $235 billion, right? So that's how much they're spending. That money, your job as investors, to see where's that money filtered down to, because it's real money. You can look at Oracle and say, wow, they got to raise money in debt, and you have Google raising money in stock along with NVIDIA, whatever. But that money has to flow down to certain companies. Now, when you see the PE ratio, the price to earnings, the price could go up tremendously, okay? And then if earnings aren't going up, maybe you have a company like SpaceX where you think it has a huge moat and this is what could happen in 5, 10 years, just like Tesla, right?
Yeah.
It's different with these companies. For example, if I have to ask you, and if you want to guess, you don't have to, but what do you think Micron? Micron is up 900%, I think, this year.
It's unbelievable.
Where do you think the PE ratio is?
I think, well, the forward PE. The forward PE is different than the trailing PE. The trailing PE is like 40s or something like that, 50s or some crazy number. But
the forward PE matters more. And I'll tell you why.
I get that. And that's based on estimates. But yes, I agree with you 100% because that's what investors look at, right? Like, what's going to be the growth and all that? I think it's under 30?
It's 11 times.
Is that what it's 11?
That's future? All because these things were kind of in the cyclical department. Now, the reason why there's a change in these industries and why they're re-rating is because it's no longer a cyclical industry. And you know that because, and I remember when it was a cyclical industry, right? This is all commoditized business. Right. One guy came out with Intel, AMD. It was kind of all the same.
Right.
Now they have 75% margins on their chips. It's insane. But what makes it non-cyclical, now it makes it a secular market, is because you have these big guys signing 3 to 5 year contracts, guaranteed pricing. And when you need storage, memory, and there's none there, now you have incredible pricing power. And now that's why you have Microsoft and all these companies and Google and all hyperscales and Amazon saying, hey, we need to lock in 3, 4, 5 years. And now they have a runway. If you look at Oracle and they call them, remaining performance obligation, which is a backlog, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it grew 450%. And I think what happened with Oracle, when it went to 300, people forgot, wait, this isn't a software company anymore. They actually have to build these data centers. Yeah. So they're going to have to raise money and it got crushed. They still have those, that massive backlog of money that's coming in, right? So when you see this 3 to 4 to 5 years.
The promises of the money coming in, mm-hmm. right? We have the promises of OpenAI, for example, $300-400 billion over time, which they haven't been profitable yet, but they're going to have a
IPO.
So therefore, just pick your number of what the value is going to be, and they can then fund whatever they need to fund by maybe mm-hmm. even selling shares, et cetera, and the hope for the fact that they're going to actually have this kind of revenue in 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. I get it, Frank. I get it. But do we also agree that there's a limitation of how far this goes to a degree?
There's definitely a limitation of how far it goes. Now, where will you see it? Where will you see it show up first? You're going to see it show up in Taiwan Semiconductor. They are the first. That's the leading indicator because people book the orders there, and then they build the chips, and then they send them to NVIDIA and every place else. Record orders, massive supply constraints, yep. right? So you're not seeing it there. We have a lot of contacts just like you do. You've been doing this podcast as long as I have. How many years? 16, 17 years now?
That's like probably? 17.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it started maybe a month after you, 2 months after you. You're the GOAT. So, when I'm looking at you know, where these companies are, where these companies are trading now, to me, it's, you know, like you say, it was a commoditized business, but there's just, you're going to see it show up in Taiwan Semi. You're going to see it show up in different areas in terms of the spending, in terms of every quarter that these companies are raising their CapEx, right? So you're going to see it in certain areas before it actually comes out. So when can it stop? Well, it'll stop when you see, not delays, because we have delays. We can go into AI and delays and stuff, because I think there's a lot of money to be made on that. But when this money slows down, you're going to be able to see it in certain spots. Taiwan Semi is definitely a way you could see it. I was going to say that I lost my train of thought when it came to having the podcast 17 years. I have great contacts. You have great contacts in a network. I know a lot of people that work in data centers that help build them for the hyperscalers. And they, fortunately, email me. We've made massive, massive money because of the shortages that they told me about in stocks. And they say that demand is off the charts. They can't fulfill their orders. They don't have enough labor, shortage supplies. So you're going to see it show up in different areas and different companies, kind of like when you saw it show up. What was the company? It wasn't just Countrywide. Before that, was Morgan Stanley's fund blew up before the credit crisis, right? That was like 2000, early 2007, right? And people were like, it didn't really hit until later 2007. It was like 9-month warning that two or three companies said, hey, we're going out of business, subprime loan companies. You're going to see it happen. There's ways. Right now, you're not seeing it. And when you do, believe me, I'll flip in a second, but every single source that I have, which are great sources, the money's still flowing. You need massive demand. And there's massive delays to get these gigawatts. That's a big problem.
No, these gigawatts that's online. Clear. But I find it really amazing the amount of money that's being pushed into these. That's all I'm saying. Like you said, Micron. We're talking about every single day it's up something. I mean, you look at
as long as
we own a bunch of these, by the way, and I'm happy as a clam, right?
Long as the E is going up, your price could go up. You could argue that Micron is cheaper today, up 900%, than it was 6 months ago, or maybe 3 years ago, because it's not just the price that's going up. Earnings are going up much more than the price. And that's what happened to NVIDIA. NVIDIA is trading at this astronomical valuation, but then all of a sudden, what was it, like 2.5 years ago, three years ago, they reported the greatest quarter I've ever seen in my life. I was like, whoa. And then now you see the earnings. So as long as the E is going up, if the E slows, and that's what you saw at Broadcom, that's what I got nailed because they said, well, maybe Google is not going to start, is going to do their chips in-house and not use their technology anymore for chips. Yeah, that was a one-off. But, you know, once you see that earnings slow, that E is not being raised and not raising guidance, look out. But we keep seeing that. And for now, that trend is intact. And it will end one day. Don't get me wrong. But right now, there's nothing that I see. There's no evidence that anyone has presented me that I saw to tell me that the spending is going to slow anytime soon.
So, you know, you do a lot of emphasis on, which we just talked about, right? The boots on the ground research. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing anything right now that is kind of out there that Wall Street's missing?
I think Wall Street is really missing the power story.
You're talking about the requirement for data centers to run and the juice that's required to cool and turn the lights on and compute.
Yeah, we're going to see blackouts pretty soon because
blackouts where?
AI.
Where are we having blackouts?
Well, I mean, we're going to see blackouts in some states. There's just not enough power. And
the summertime is here. Good point.
And the summertime is here. You're going to see that. And it's just a matter of math, right? And you know, when I looked at these models, and that's what our job is to do. We want to look at the status quo. We want to look at the estimates. We want to look at the consensus and see when they're wrong on you know, because that's what the market trades on is where you know, the consensus is really.
Right.
They're predicting, I think, 100 gigawatts of power to come online by 2030, what we need. I think it's 200. It's more like 200. What the models are forecasting for are large language models, which require a lot more power. Agentic AI requires probably about 15x more power, and we're not even talking about robotics, that which is the next step, and that's coming close. That's going to be close. So now you have massive delays because of shortages, but there's no delays in AI spend. So you're seeing this rapid push where we need more power for AI. You see all the new models coming out. Look at the models that have come out with Google that help and Alphabet, which increased its market cap by over $1 trillion, right? Because Gemini.
The surprise of the AI move, in my opinion.
Oh, me too. I thought they were dead in the water, right? And look, that credit to them of how they transitioned, right?
Amazing.
And then you see, look at, you know, who's going public with Claude, Anthropic, and all coding. I mean, look what it did to software. Look what it's doing to all these, you know, just it's remarkable of what Claude could do. It's every place, right? And we're using it as well for AI for our business. But it's to see how fast these models are changing, how much they're moving, and just we're scratching the surface of agentic AI where there'll be people predicting like, hundreds of millions, there'll be billions of bots. People are using thousands of them for sales, for everything that you would normally do. You'd do it great. You went right on my podcast and just went, you know, did a Siri thing and was able to, you know, to book your trip for you, right?
Right.
2 seconds.
Right.
I mean, and that's like light years. That's like light years technology in this right now. So the power that we need and the requirements are still there. We need a massive amount of power, right? But now you're seeing delays. 60% of the projects are delayed, which means what? Where's the opportunity here? The opportunity is who has the current power. And there's a lot of Bitcoin miners that are changing because Bitcoin mining is not a sustainable business model. It's not a scalable business, meaning that you have to pay more in order for you to generate more money. You have to buy more power, more electricity, the best chips, right? In order for you to produce, right? So it's not a scalable business. Now they got lucky. We're sitting on this massive power that the biggest hyperscalers in the world will pay hundreds of billions of dollars for immediately. So now they're transferring, it's called tier one Bitcoin mining to tier three and transitioning. And the companies that made the transition is Digipower, DGXX. You know, we had this on the books, I think at $1.67. It's
I
seven.
I have a friend. I'll tell you offline a story about that. That's very interesting.
Vivo is another one. Vivo is a recent power company. They just came out with their recent presentation. They have more power. They have about three times the amount of power as DGXX. Iron is another one. I wouldn't go with Mara. Probably the worst.
Mara was the old Bitcoin miner.
Yeah, I mean,
but what about some of the other guys? Some of the SMRs. Do you like those guys?
The SMRs. I'm a little worried about because they do not have technology that's scalable yet. But what we saw early on is the company that did have it was Bloom Energy, and we recommended that in the 20s, and that was 1,000% winner for us, and we closed out of that position near, I think 280, 290, because they could scale, right? These other companies. They're based on, hey, this is going to happen. The SMR technology is not here. It's here for you know, everybody always tells me, well, it's in, you know, submarines and stuff. I'm talking about the portable power, right? That stuff, you could scale. It's not.
Frank, can you bring over your nuclear reactor for me, please? I got to plug something in.
It's not there yet, but I think uranium is a great, great play here because uranium stocks have fallen and uranium prices have stayed up. You're going to need uranium. You're going to need one sector that I've always hated in my whole life.
Don't say another word. I'm going to take a break right here. When we come back, Frank's going to tell us about his...
Everybody's like coming that back. One.
What? I want to tell you about Interactive Brokers. You know, you could trade your portfolio with the power of prediction market probabilities. With Interactive Brokers, trade prediction markets on election, climate, and economic outcomes, right alongside stocks, options, and bonds. Prediction market prices reflect probability. And correct predictions receive $1 per contract, plus earn interest on your position. Of course, prediction markets are not suitable for all investors. Visit IBKR.com/predictions. That's IBKR.com/predictions. Interactive Brokers, great company. Frank, what do you hate? Tell me. Come.
The sector that I've hated all my life is alternative energy, because you know, when you have something that needs to be subsidized, you know, I was never on board with it, right? And I just, I've seen a good trading opportunity, not telling you not to trade it, but a sustainable business is where you buy and hold forever. You know, look, when you need the sun to be out, you need the wind to be out for that energy to work. It's not 24/7 baseload. However, a lot has changed in the solar industry, because what these companies need, and just to put this in perspective, Microsoft signed a deal to open up Three Mile Island, which won't be open for another 5 years. That's assuming you're going to get state, local approval, federal approval. And they bought electricity out, I think, 20 years after. So right. If that doesn't tell you the dire need for these guys for electricity, that, there it is, right? So reopening a plant that was closed. What's happened with solar, the battery storage component of solar, that is now hugely economical, hugely better than gas turbine when it comes to power and portable power. And what you need is the peak hours is the toughest, because it's 24/7 when you look at AI, and they're worried about peak time. And it keep you still have this massive demand that's increasing. So what do we do during the peak hours? Okay, let's get portable stuff that we could just come off the grid and help the grid out, right? Kind of like a simple explanation. When you're looking at companies, there's two companies, not the solar panel companies. I'm not talking about those. We know that a lot of funding got cut, but the ones that have the battery storage, Shoals is a company that's $10. That's SHLS. Nextracker, NXT is another one. These companies are printing money. I wouldn't be surprised if they buy back their stock. You're getting them at a really good discount here. You know, we're in and we'll probably put 30-40% on them. I think these companies skyrocket, because it's providing something that you have this massive amount of money that wants to pour into anything that they can get energy. And these guys have the technology, the portable technology. It's exactly what the hyperscalers are in dire need of. And that's one of the areas that I didn't like at all. And those are the two companies I really like.
Is this a backdoor conversation to the rare earths, which you brought up earlier?
No, I think it's totally separate. I think, you know, what rare earths is more about, look, we probably used 1 billion drones. I might be exaggerating there. Who knows? But look at all the they got to replenish this. Especially in the U.S., right? I mean, think of how much that we spent in terms of, you know, our military, and how much that we've used in terms of drones, right?
Yeah.
So we're looking at rare earths. We know, especially tungsten and all these rare earths, and we know the China story. Now there's a big push where we really don't have the right geography for it, where we could produce that here. And it's an incredible dirty process. But we are signing deals with other areas. U.S. Rare Earths is one that you know, the government came into. You know, there's other ones with tungsten that I'm probably going to be working with in the marketing consulting part of our company, which is really, really exploding right now. It's fantastic. And this company just putting themselves together, and they're part of the Trump circle as well, where we need rare earths. We're in dire need of them, right? And we don't want to rely on China, because that's one of the things. So, you know, companies like that I'm looking at, I think, when it comes to rare earths, and, you know, what is the government supporting? Because when the government supports, especially that industry, it's the worst industry because it's so cost intensive. But more importantly, the delays and the permitting and all this crap, right? So when you have the government, our government coming in and taking a stake or saying, hey, we're going to support you guys, now it opens the door to private capital to come in, because now they can say, okay, this is going to fast track these projects and build them really quicker. And believe me, a lot of these stocks will take off once that happens. That's what happened with Intel.
Is that part of maybe the animal spirits that we're seeing right now? Because literally every time we see a little bit of a dip, it's like, okay, let's go in. Or even I'll tell you the other side is, even when we see it move higher, everybody's like, okay, let's go in. You know, there's a lot of animal spirits right now. Do you think that this is because that so much of this is going to be backed by government, fast track, no red tape, and everybody's kind of, it's bleeding over into all this other stuff? Because, you know, when we started before 2026, forget about the war. I don't even want to talk about the war. I'm not even talking about it, because it's pissing me off. But the the before that, we saw actually a lot of these companies taking a bit of a hit. You know, you saw Microsoft get whacked, Google got whacked, all these companies got whacked for a minute there. Everybody's like, well, we're not sure where that's going, how much it's going to be. And then all of a sudden, like, money further exploded. It was already exploding anyway, what was going into this. But it exploded even further. And then it seemed like with the government coming into the rare earths, into the Intels, into the other companies, you know, and then the threats or the discussions of, hey, you know what, maybe we'll get involved in that. Do you think that's helping to backstop and then create further animal spirits? Like, you know what, the government's going to be involved here. If they're going to be talking about the markets all the time, let's just go. We're going to do
it. I don't think that's the backstop of the market. I really don't. I sold a lot of stocks about a month and a half ago and, you know, worried that, you know, we were pricing in 3 months ago, you know, rate cuts. Yeah. And the market was pricing that in. And right. I don't think we're going to get a rate hike. I know it's the percentages say we're going to get a rate hike. I think it's just, you know, the new Fed, whatever, just trying to, you know, you could talk it up and get your results.
Yeah, you're right.
So next, I mean, if you look a year from now, okay, Iran, you don't have to worry about Iran, what tariffs is going to come down. We're seeing other things roll over. I mean, housing's really rolling over. No one's talking about it. I mean, houses are on sale for a very long time. And we used to have an inventory
and
problem.
And actually, we have some of the highest level. We just talked about this on DH Unplugged this week. Mm-hmm. We have the highest level of sellers retracting, coming off the market, 7-8% in certain areas in, we'll call it not the Midwest, but the Southwest, right? The Southwest, California, 7.8%, 7.8 to 8.5% of sellers that are saying, you know what? This isn't selling. We're taking it off the market, which will actually increase prices potentially because there's less supply out there. But it also talks about the frustration of what's happening. So yeah, continue on. But that's a big issue.
That's the thing. Yeah. We had a supply problem, right? Yeah. There's not enough inventory. Now you look at the home builders, there's inventory in the market now. And right. they're you're seeing those prices come down now because there is inventory in the markets. And it's not just the interest rate. I mean, you can't move sideways if you bought a house 6-7 years ago, right? Which say if you live in New York, California, you're like, I want to move to Florida, I want to go to Texas, right? And yeah. you know, whatever it is, whatever your politics are. But you know, say if you have a house, just hypothetically $1 million and you have a mortgage on it and you want to move, you can't buy a $1 million house. Your mortgage was 3.1, 3.3, and now it's going to be 6.5%. You throw in electricity prices.
And the taxes increase.
It's not just tax increases, but insurance, and then, you know, oil and energy and everything is, yeah, they just, people just, it's just completely unaffordable, right?
I mean, if I was to literally move next door, right? Mm-hmm. My house, so let's assume it's the same house, right? If I was literally to sell my house and move next door, I'd have like a 25% increase in overall cost.
That's such a great example. Right? That's such a great, like right? I always say, if you move from here to here, but even if you move next door to your house,
next door.
Or if
I sell my house
lower.
And buy it back, it's just going to be the same situation, right? Even the same situation. Now I'm going to have higher taxes. I'm going to have higher costs overall. I'm going to have higher mortgage. If I had a mortgage, you know, it's a problem.
And that's the one thing that scares me, because we need rates to come lower, and they're not going to come lower where inflation is right now. And you know, we have projections where inflation will come down a year from now, but it's still very, very high. It's, you know, highest levels. We had a 4 print on it, right? So, and CPI. So it's, you know, we thought we were done with this, and we know a lot of it's from the war now that, you know, it's opened up the strait, depending on what day we're looking at this, but and it could change, right? What is really
don't
everybody
get me started.
Go back.
Don't get me started.
Yeah, it's just crazy. But anyway, it's you want to see inflation come down. The job market's good. Yes, we have massive inflation. The reason why the market is up with this inflation is because we've seen wages grow alongside, right? So people are making more money while their costs are increasing for now. But now you're seeing wage growth starting to slow. And that has me nervous, because I don't think the market's really pricing in higher interest rates for another 12 months. And that's going to remove the housing catalyst. That's going to remove, you know, you look at technology when we see interest rates high and borrowing costs. I mean, these companies aren't even going to the debt market anymore. I mean, Google went and raised money through stock. So did NVIDIA, which makes sense. I mean, they were able to raise it at the exact same price, right? $85 billion. I mean, to put that in perspective, we just saw the largest IPO in history, and that was less than what Google just raised in terms of the money that they raised. I think they raised $75 billion SpaceX.
But I think NVIDIA—
Google raised $85
billion. SpaceX was $75 billion with a $10 billion green shoe. And then, but didn't NVIDIA just raise $20 billion through debt?
NVIDIA too, through stock. So you're looking at these companies.
Debt, but okay.
Oh, no, it might've been debt for NVIDIA. I know.
NVIDIA was $20 billion debt. It was like, okay, thank you. We snapped that up. That's very nice. Like $20 billion.
Yeah. $20 billion, like nothing. I mean, these, it's
Fugazi, you know, five,
what is it? You know, $4 trillion, whatever the market cap is now. It's unbelievable when you see these companies that what's going to move the needle for them? And that's why they're going all in on AI. Yeah. It's, you know, you're looking at some of these guys are forming, you know, $20 billion businesses that don't move the needle for them. That's incredible, right? When you think about it.
I agree.
That's the sheer size of them.
Is the boogeyman under the bed, the monster under the bed for you, the housing issue? Is there something that's kind of, you know, perking you up that there's something out there that's a concern? Or you've just thinking, like most people, by the way, that every concern just gets washed over?
The concern for me is that the lack of positive catalysts. We do have government spending. We're going to get tax checks, of course. We're going to get tax checks probably a month and a half before the elections, right? That's what his plan. That's going to be nice. That's going to give people, you know, a little shot in the arm of the economy. We'll get those, you know, for midterm elections, of course.
Right.
You know, so we have the government that's always going to spend. We have that catalyst. We have a massive amount of money from AI that's still going to be spent. So those are catalysts. The thing is, we need interest rates. Right now, earnings are supporting our valuation. We have probably 20, 21 times forward earnings we're trading S&P 500. We're growing earnings by 20%. So you can't argue that we're an expensive market because our market was more expensive pretty much the past 5 years than it is now when you factor in growth. Like, I mean, you and I talk about this all the time, Andrew, when it comes to earnings. I mean, right. Earnings are growing 20%.
Which is unbelievable, by the way. And then
you have sales at 10%, 12%, which is the highest since 2022, right? So, you know, these guys aren't just cutting costs and using what they're seeing their sales, their productivity is increasing tremendously.
Meta and several other companies, many other companies are actually leaning out. Right? They're thinning out and nobody's blaming AI because you can't blame AI because if you blame AI, it's a problem. you know, God forbid you say something like that. You can't. The fact of the matter is that AI is part of the deal. I could tell you that AI for our company, it's like, you know, we just increased productivity X times due to the fact that just a small amount of AI that's used for things like, you know, grammatical review, assistance in writing, you know, things about, for example, today we had a client portfolio that we redid, right? He's like, you know, I think I want to change my risk profiles. So we did that. Usually I'd have to go, okay, look, we reduced this, we increased this, you know, the way we did this, right? You know what I did? I cut and paste this huge spreadsheet, just grabbed it, like literally just grabbed it, right? And I said, do me a favor, tell me where the differentials are, tell me what we increased, what we decreased, sector by sector and individual name, through the change of the model and make it into an email that I can send to a client. Clip, paste, done. Like literally that would take me an hour and a half, 2 hours, somebody in my office to do. Just, you know, well, to kind of put that together. It literally took 30 seconds.
A bigger example is you're really not going to need your Bloomberg terminal pretty soon. I mean, we use Capital IQ. I'm canceling it. It was 30,000. Then I paid 22. I don't need it anymore because everything I can get on. If you think about what these systems are, what do? It's not like they're analyzing for you. What they're doing is they're pulling data that's very hard to get in 10Ks and 10Qs and past data and giving you consensus estimates and everything. And literally you could get that through AI now, right? So they just, it's a bunch of a million APIs that they say, and you say, give me all the Walmart suppliers that are publicly traded companies, right? Which would take you a year to find, right? And Capital IQ would do that in 2 seconds on a screen. AI could do that 2 seconds on a screen. So I used to pay $30,000 for Capital IQ, and that's an alternative to Bloomberg. I think you use Bloomberg.
Yep.
I mean,
we use a variety of things. Why charge all
that?
But
have you
seen
those stocks?
Frank, I have a question. That's because there's cost effective right now. Are these companies, once they get this thing locked and loaded, are they going to start doing the whole, you know, the token cost factor? Because, I mean, we're paying for what? For Copilot, $30 per seat, $30 a month for ChatGPT, Claude nothing at this moment, ChatGPT $20, $25 a month. Is that going to be like, no, that was the teaser. You know, now that we've hooked you.
That was a streaming teaser. It's going to be cheaper for everybody.
Maybe
streaming is a fortune, but I think people are going to, what you're seeing now is separation where it's, you know, OpenAI and Anthropic. I mean, Anthropic has really taken a lead. Gemini has taken a lead, right?
Sure.
Where Microsoft is hurting. You're seeing,
I want to kill my Microsoft, guy, the co-pilot guy. When I talk to him on my phone, I'm like, I could be arrested for like some kind of, like AI abuse. I'm like, you.
It's bad. Meta too. And you're seeing the separation. I'm not saying that, you know, even Nvidia, I mean, when you have, you know, it's up so high, there's just so much underneath that underneath these levels where it comes to, you know, some of these Bitcoin miners who are making the transition, not saying they are, who made it already, who are getting contracts. DGXX just got a contract. Vivo said, hey, we just interviewed, you know, a bunch of hyperscalers for our power. Iron's another one that signed contracts, right? So, you know, it's one thing that if you say you're going to do, it's another thing to do it and get a contract. That means it's you know, validated. I will say we go back to some of these informational providers. Have you seen the stock prices for FactSet IT, which is Gartner?
Oh, terrible. Awful.
I mean, Accenture.
Accenture had the biggest drop they had last week.
2017 levels. So, you know, if you want to know if these guys are going to get it right, we saw what software companies that got annihilated and now they've come back. They're still well off their highs.
Right.
They're starting to figure out a little bit. They don't have pricing power. They're going to lose that huge, you know, premium they had to the market because they don't have massive pricing power. But this industry, if you look at those stocks, they continue to fall rapidly and they're losing business. They haven't found a bottom yet, which means you can't go in there and say, wow, look how cheap this is. They haven't figured it out. You have to get a quarter under your belt where, hey, this is better. And then another quarter, which you saw some of these software companies are getting impacted. I mean, FactSet, Accenture, I mean, all these companies that used to just pull data and provide reports for you. I mean, all that could be done through AI almost for free now, or do you know, a membership for a couple hundred dollars.
By the way, let me tell you a great AI, relatively inexpensive. Mm-hmm. You know, briefing.com? I love it.
I use it. I still use briefing.com. Yeah.
Have you seen the AI component?
Yeah, and it generates. It's not as good as their bullets that they put out, but it's
great.
AI,
but if you want to look at, hey, do me a favor, just give me some of the past blah 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 blah. It gives you nice tables. Very, you know, why is this stock moving today? As opposed to me going to look for it all the way down, it gives you a whole bunch of information. It's just right there.
They needed to do that because that's another informational provider that's pulling information from all these sources that are giving it. So anybody that's that middleman that's pulling stuff, any middleman, good luck.
Yeah.
Because, man, you better figure out a different business model because AI is coming for you.
Right. So let me close with this question for you and ask this. Where is the easy money? Well, we talked a little bit about this, but where's the easy money over the next 12 months? I mean, is it going to be your power? Is it going to be your chip plays? Is it going to be, like you mentioned, uranium coming back and that's, you know, needed? And by the way, the uranium, which is interesting about the uranium is, and I'm not talking to you uranium bugs out there because we got the gold bugs, we got the uranium bugs, you know what I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is if in fact Microsoft is signing a deal with 3 Mile and you see Turkey Point and you see all these other ones and the potential for SMR to come online, all that stuff is all uranium, right? So those are long-term plays with potential, right? There's always going to be a spark right now if the idea is going to be that somewhere in the future it's going to happen. So I think that the long-term play of there is, you know, reasonable.
The long-term play is reasonable, but remember, it's all about pricing, right? Because right now, if you're buying chip stock, they're pricing in this huge demand for AI, right? If you're buying anything within the infrastructure data centers, they're pricing in. Uranium right now, if you look at a company like UEC, it's from my buddy Amir Adnani, who's great. He ran this company for 15, 17 years. This is a company that was trading at 20. It's now at 12. So when I look at the pricing and you still have the demand curve of saying, hey, we need power and we can't get it. And uranium is a very easy source of them to get it. And now you have, you know, Goldman Sachs raising money for UEC and a big partner with them. And you know, they're part of like the Trump circle as well, a lot of these uranium companies. Not that they have a stake in the company, but you know, the laws are opening up for uranium, right? In the United States where, hey, let's have stockpiles and stuff like that. Where you know, when I see the pricing of where it is, that determines of what I like. And when I'm seeing what happens to uranium, it's down so much. I think it's a very low risk, very high reward place to be in the market right now because the stocks are down. So, you know, it depends. Like you said, I love Google when Google is getting hammered, right? That's when I recommend. We're up 180% on it. I wouldn't tell you to buy, you know, NVIDIA might be a little bit better now. It's come off its highs, but you know, you want to make sure you're getting it at a good price and you're not just closing your eyes. And you know, that's worked for a little while, but filtering down to Bitcoin miners, I think, who are making that transition are good. And also there's a lot of small caps and we're working with a couple of companies here, like, like Telescope Innovations or Blue Energies, where these companies are able to use AI now and build out. And these smaller companies where it's very hard to get capital or it's very hard to get good teams, AI is helping them tremendously. And I really believe that's why you're seeing small caps outperform the entire market for the first time in a very, very long time, where these companies are so efficient. They were so bad and out of favor that they cut costs for the past 2-3 years. Now they're sitting there lean and now they figured out, okay, how could we grow being this lean? And you're seeing these companies put up the earnings. So I really like some of these small caps.
One of the best things and one of the best setups is companies that are actually having problems that cut the fat. They really go through a reorg, management change to a potential, looking at what they're doing from a holistic standpoint. Then all of a sudden they become in favor, their sector, their product and all that. And then they're just like printing bucks, right? I love
that.
When
do you see that? There's two key indicators. I would say one is wait for the quarter to come out, and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, these guys figured it out, right? And you might wait another quarter. So what? You miss a 30% move higher. These things, some down 60%. But the other thing is, are you seeing insider buying? And you see insider buyings on some of these things because they're like, wow, we're about to explode. And when you see insider buys, and I'm not talking about from 13Fs. I'm talking about like the CEOs or the CFOs, like decent insider buys. These guys are not buying for a month or two. They see a trend over the next couple of years that they're buying this stock dirt cheap. And those are two indicators that I like to look at instead of just going in there blindly and saying, wow, this company could be good now. It's down. They cut costs. Those are two indicators I like. One quarter of, wow, this is good. And turn business around and some insider buying.
Sure. All right, before we finish, because I want to get some time for this, there's a big announcement that you made last week, Huge. Frank. And to be honest with you, I have no idea what it is. I'm telling you right now. I'm not lying. I mean, because you wrote me like, hey, something big's happened to us. And I literally don't know what it is. So you're talking to me directly now. I want to know what Curzio Alpha is.
So we're trying to I've been doing this for 30 years and the newsletter industry lost its way, right? It's more about they become part of the system. Like my dad did this 25 years ago, right. Andrew. It was, you know, they looked at guys even like you and me because, you know, to ignore the BS on Wall Street and get taken advantage of. And now the newsletter industry became part of the system. And, you know, you have editors launching 9 different newsletters and they'll charge you $1,000, $5,000, $3,000, $2,000. And next thing you know, you're paying $10,000, $20,000 in newsletters. And what we did is we consolidated all of our newsletters into one. And we did that because AI is absolutely on fire for us. Small caps is on fire for us. But we also had a crypto newsletter that we shut down about 9 months ago because I saw 6 to 9 months ago where I saw a change in that industry, a fundamental change where people can't make money. And I pushed everyone into AI and our AI stocks. I mean, we had 1,000% winner. We had Celestica. It's up 450%, big winners. But if you decided to buy just that one newsletter, you're getting crushed. So for us, we said, you know, everybody should have access to everything that we do, right? And that's the way it should be. And so we created this one-stop product, everything under one umbrella, where we interview lots of CEOs.
Called Alpha, right? Curzio Alpha?
Alpha. Curzio Alpha, you're going to get that. So it's one membership, and you get everything that we do now, right? And we're going to have specialized podcasts, live broadcasts within it. We're going to set up chat rooms, text messaging, you know, recommend stocks, whatever we want, not wait for a month to go by. This way everybody gets it, you know, so it's more interactive. We have all kinds of screening features too, because we have a bunch of stocks that we combine in portfolios. So if you just want AI, if you just want small caps, you just want large caps, you want biotech.
You can click it. It has features.
It's massive. It's been 9 months in the making and it's a lot. And now consolidating, what we felt is this is a better product for you, right? For the customer, because you and I really don't have to work anymore. And we've done very well because we've worked very, very hard over the past 30 years. You know, I love helping people. You love helping people. Yeah. We love what we do. And we want to provide that because when I see the newsletter industry where you're buying 7 or 8 different products and you happen to buy the wrong one,
right. You
have to be part of, we know where to go with the market. We talked about 8 different sectors just now.
Right.
You know, you shouldn't be limited to one because you brought the wrong product.
Right.
And we're very excited. I think this is going to transform the entire industry, not just us. So we just launched this. You can go to Curzio Research to learn more about it. And we're going to talk a lot about that on Wall Street Unplugged podcast, even on Wednesday. So
let's promote something also while we're at it here. It's way out in the future. It's like 4 or 5 months out in the future, but each year you have an annual meeting with people and you just happen to have in Fort Lauderdale, literally down the block from where I am. And you invited me to come and speak this year.
Curzio. So it's called the Curzio One Wealth Forum. And we launched it last year. It's for credit investors only. That's our Curzio One membership. We get it to private deals and private deals are fantastic. I think it's horrible that they want to open up the entire market to everyone. I think it's dangerous. We saw that with SPACs and everyone took advantage. My job in getting people in here is, one, I'm investing my own money. I'm not getting paid by the companies, right? So you pay for a membership to get access to this and you invest alongside me if you want. I'm going to show you probably 5, 6, 7 deals a year, maybe 2, 3 deals. And we've done very well getting into the private markets. And then we have a conference that we launched first time last year. And I think we had 125 people there. And what a network. And I interviewed. I didn't have anyone. The 12 different companies that you know we're associated with. When I say associated with that, we either private companies or companies that we recommended, we had the CEOs and I interviewed every one of them on stage. So I didn't let them do a presentation because presentations can be boring as shit. So it was interactive. People got to ask questions. Everybody talked to each other. It was one of the best things. It was a Pier 66. And I invited you. I said, you know, I got to speak to you on stage because you're going to love it. The group was great. Everybody checks their ego at the door. There's companies raising money there. There was just so many ideas that we shared. Guys that run data centers. Yeah, to help build data sets. Just so many different, the largest independent bond fund manager in the world is a client of mine and he's there too. So it's just so many different perspectives. It's not about me. It's about the network and having everyone there and being able to talk to everyone. It was an unbelievable experience. Everybody loved it. And I can't wait for you to speak there because you're going to really like it. It's good, good people.
Great place, and by the way. Great facility.
Pier 66. We're having it there again because it's so good. We're going to have it different parts of the country, wonderful. But it was unbelievable how great. It's October. Yeah. If Fort Lauderdale, it can't get better than that if you're someplace else in the country.
Perfect, perfect.
Thanks for that. I appreciate that.
Frank Xavier Curzio, thank you very much for always being a good friend, a great, great guest. I appreciate you, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thanks, brother. I appreciate it,
thanks.
Too.
All right. Bye. And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me this week. Thanks for joining me every single week. Make sure to tell your friends, your family, everybody that you know, you got to listen to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thank you so much. Check it out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music. We even got a YouTube. Oh, go over to Twitter. We got some little clips, some videos that are on there as well. Thanks for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you again real soon. This podcast is intended for informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal, and past performance is not indicative of future results. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and any guests and may not necessarily reflect those of Horowitz & Company, Inc., an investment advisor registered with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of training or skill. Advisory services are only offered to a client or prospective clients where Horowitz & Company is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Any mention of third-party companies, products, or services is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute an endorsement. Hypothetical scenarios or forward-looking statements are for illustrative purposes and should not be viewed as guarantees. Content is intended for U.S. residents only and may not be applicable in other jurisdictions. Listeners should consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Please visit our website for additional information, disclosures, as well as a copy of our Form CRS. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates or partners.